Hey, hey, all you Arizona lovers. This is the Finding Arizona podcast, episode number 118. We are sitting down with Ron Blake. This one is going to be an emotional ride, and I want everyone to know about this guy. I want to hear his story. When he came to us, he wanted to just share who he was and what happened to him, and that's how he continues his life. So this episode is really serious, it's really emotional, and it's also got some things that if you're not wanting your kids to listen to, I encourage you, maybe skip this one, try out next week's one. Ron Blake is a survivor of sexual assault, and it was just part of his story and how he's living his life now post that, and you know, dealing with the actual PTSD. And it's just one of those things that, like, I just encourage everyone to listen to this episode and take it all in, hear where he's coming from, understand that this person, this individual, went through something, and he's trying to live his life better. He's trying to accept what happened to him. He's trying to understand and move through it. And I think a lot of us would gain so much from listening to his story. And I appreciate all of you listening to Finding Arizona Podcast. Hey guys, I'm your host, Jose. I want to say you can find us at FindingArizonaPodcast.com. You can also reach out to us through social media at Finding Arizona Podcast. And last but not least, you can hear more episodes and gain early access by going to Patreon.com/FindingArizonaPodcast, and you can become a monthly subscriber to that. Thank you. Again, this is all fun for us, and we've been doing this 118 times in a row, and we want to get better. We want your ears to hear us a little bit better. We want this experience to be a little bit better every day for you guys, and we are making the steps towards that. We are working with a bunch of wonderful people that we've, you know, just met, and we are excited to share some new stuff that might be coming out. I'm gonna write it down and do like a little commercial spiel intro thing, and that'll come out soon, maybe next week. We're just still trying to get all the kinks worked out before we get this all set and going. And it's really a testament to all of you out there listening, because that's what we are excited about. We're excited to share stories about the local area here, and we're excited to get you guys involved. We want this to be something special, and I think that we're on that tipping point. And so hopefully all of you will help us out, encourage us, and maybe give us some feedback. That would mean a lot to us. And the one way you can do that, if you're an iTunes subscriber, hit that subscribe button, leave a comment about, or some feedback about this episode. And another thing I encourage you all to do is just, all of you, just go out and listen to one episode. And if you like that person, go check out their website. And that really helps connect all of us together. It's gonna be a lot of fun this year, because I'm taking some things off of my plate, and hopefully creatively that'll help me try some new stuff that I've been thinking about wanting to do. And I'm very excited, because it's something new for me, something new for Brittany, something new for the people that are getting involved with us. I'm just hoping that all of you kind of understand that at the end of the day, I want everyone to have fun, and I want everyone to feel like they're a part of something. I want everyone to just understand that all of this, no matter what, is an open door policy to let you guys tell your story. Nowhere in this do I want to be not fun and not a good time for everyone, because why not? Why are we doing this if we're not having a good time? So I hope all of you understand that I'm going to try and do my best for you, the listener, to be better, do better. And it all starts here at the intro. So please take a listen to our episode. Ron Blake, episode 118. Let's do this.
Sucker right now. All right, I think we're ready to go. We're live. Yeah. You're ready to go. Welcome back, everybody, to the Finding Arizona podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jose, and we are always bringing in wonderful guests, and today is no different. I heard this TED Talk, and it was really amazing. You were over at Grand Canyon University?
Yeah.
And then, so I am going to give it right off to you. Why don't you introduce yourself and what you're doing here today?
Yeah, my name, it's Ron Blake. And it's been, I don't even, sometimes when I talk to people the first time, like with this journey, it's so different. But yeah. I'll start off by saying, usually too, when I meet people, I've got my giant foam poster boards with me.
First question you get is like, what is that?
Yeah. And it usually grabs people's attention when I, I guess I'll just tell you like how this works. I was diagnosed with PTSD, and it came, so many people, when they see me, assume I'm military. But I mean, even if people don't see me and they hear PTSD, most people, their first instinct is, oh, it's what branch of the military? But I'm not. I live in downtown Phoenix, and that's where my trauma happened. Mm-hmm. There was a night that three guys came into my loft. I had been sleeping, and I was held down and sexually assaulted. And it just... I mean, they did horrific things to me. And after the police left, it doesn't happen. I think sometimes people think it happens immediately where you start shutting down. For me, I started isolating. It was gradual and I couldn't identify it, but over time it got really bad.
Yeah.
And there was just, a night, it was 26 and a half months ago. And I got really suicidal on that night, struggled and, for my TV would always be on. Mm-hmm. And on that particular night, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert came on. And at some point I laughed and I paused the show. And I told people, you know, sometimes the media would cover this story of what I'm doing and say that the laughter saved my life. And when I was able to do that TEDx talk, I delved into it a little bit further. And it really was the fact that I recognized I laughed that night. Yeah. That was what saved my life. And I paused the show for probably 3 minutes that night. And I just, it was one of the strangest feelings, but it was one of the most hopeful feelings I've ever had, the most hopeful feeling. So on that night, I just thought, I'm going to get on this show. I'm going to use this laughter. I'm going to do something with this. Something good is still coming out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to bed with hope that night. And then the very next morning I was at the Staples store at Central and Osborne in Central Phoenix. And I had to buy paper for something. And for whatever reason, I stood in front of these giant foam poster boards and this lady walked up to me and said, can I help you? And I remember just looking at her and I thought, do you have more of these in the back? And I didn't really know what I was going to do at that point. I just thought, do you have more? And she went around the corner and said, let me go check. And I remember she turned around and she said, well, how many do you want? And I never said I wanted any. And it was that moment. Everybody asks, oh, did you have an aha moment? It was that. Like, I could see it all. And I thought, instead of just going up to strangers and re-engaging again, because I needed to do that. My doctors had been saying for a long time, we have to get you to re-engage because you told us you need this. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, all right, I will go up to people. I'll tell them my story. So I will start talking. I will learn how to re-engage. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell them I want to get on the show and tell them what happened. And I envisioned like Sharpie markers, big boards, because I didn't want to be a clipboard, but I wanted sort of verification I was talking to people. And it just, that's how it became this big journey. And then on November 12th of 2015, I set out and I said, I'm going to go meet people. And I started at
ASU. And it begins.
at Arizona State University, their downtown campus. And that, wow, it was just incredible. And there's one guy only on this whole journey out of, now I've met 24,024 strangers. Over the last 798 days in a row I've done this, only one person has ever seen a blank board, and his name's Joshua. And I met him, and I met him a year later after that moment. And it's so cool because had he been dismissive of me, this whole thing may never have happened. I may not be here today.
The one straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Like, if he wouldn't have done that, that would have just kind of deteriorated everything, the momentum, all of it.
Because I tell people, I don't think we take enough credit as humans as to how important we are. That guy was so important in my life. And we underestimate our power as humans. And for me, just, and he was really important because he's the first, but on this journey, I mean, I meet so many people that share stuff with me and it changes my life. But they, what people don't understand is when they sign support on these boards or put whatever they want, because I always tell people it's your board. I mean, they're supporting me because they're listening to me, but whatever they decide to put, I mean, they put artwork, poetry, Bible verses, short stories, jokes. I had a bunch of engineering students at a community college put math equations. It was so crazy. Yeah, it was like, but they turned it into like a story of some kind that was really cool. He had people put like invisible ink or whatever. It's like, so it's just like, but it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah.
It became this incredible collective story.
And it's very interesting, too, because there's a lot of aspects of it that I want to dive in with you. One of the things that kind of jumps out at me, you said you laughed on that episode. Do you remember what it was like, what the joke was? Do you remember exactly what, like, what made you, what tickled your rib? Or, like, do you also, I want to get into, like, emotionally, how hard that tipping point was for you to laugh, like... Like, what pulled it over the edge, so to speak?
For me, well, I don't... It's interesting that you asked me this, because there's a lady in Miami, a newspaper down there. She interviewed me about a week ago, and she just sent me an email today and said, I'm just doing a follow-up on the story we're going to do. Can you tell me what made you laugh that night? And I said, I don't know.
That's like, crazy.
Everybody's asked me, but it was during the monologue. I know that much.
Okay.
It was the opening of the show. It was the monologue. But the tipping point for me, I shouldn't say the word alarming. It was just surprising that I recognized I laughed. I think I know that is what was so big for me, as I just sat there and I thought, you know, I'm sitting here. I feel like I'm done. It's like, you don't want to take your life when you're in such a bad situation, but when you're not sleeping, you're going through so much fatigue. And then the days you do sleep, you have night terrors, you have nightmares, and it's so tough. And at some point, your quality of life just goes down. So at that point, when I laughed, I just thought, this is so strange, because I felt like I was at the end of my rope that day. And I just had that moment. So it was just like so powerful.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I don't know, it's like you see in the movies where there's a tunnel or like somebody stuck in a cave and they see this light shine out and then you start throwing more rocks at it to open up the hole so more light shines in. And that was sort of what I felt that night, that I just thought, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna hold on to this. And I captured it. It was like capturing lightning in a bottle or something similar. And I've never
looked back.
I've never let go of that. It's just so weird that, I mean, here I am 2 days away from 800 days in a row just going out to meet people. But I wear these bracelets every day that people give me on the journey. These have a huge meaning, and they take me back to that night. Because I always said, if I put these on for the day to go out and meet people and I don't feel any motivation, I'm done. But I always do, because it reminds me, it's just really powerful. I want to get on this show. It's very symbolic.
Yeah. I think it means a lot. I mean, clearly it means a lot. The other thing is, like, if you had a chance, and I'm not trying to be negative or anything, but if you had a chance to at least say something to Stephen just for that one singular moment that he gave you, what would it be to him?
Well, and I think, I mean, for me, it's just, I mean, he's in the business of making people laugh. Mm-hmm. And so are all the people on that show. And it's a powerful thing. What's so important about, like, what they do in particular is it's something that when it, like, for me, for example, that night when it happened, I told people I was always looking for the miracle in distance that was going to save me. And really what was surprising is it was laughter. It was right in front of me the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, but I've laughed before. I looked at pictures 2 years before that, right after then the trauma happened. And there were moments I'd see pictures, I'm smiling, I'm video, I'm laughing. But if you're not focusing on it, if you don't recognize it, it might not even exist. And so, for Colbert, I mean, I would just, you guys are engaged in something that, I mean, so many people, I mean, even it doesn't have to just be Stephen Colbert and laughter, for some people, it could be a book.
Yeah.
Like it could be an author. It could be J.K. Rowling. It could be, for some people, the Bible. Mm-hmm. For others, it could be a chef, like that makes some amazing food and changes them. So I just say to people, like, find that thing that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Like even if it brings you a moment of happiness, hold on to that, because you can't put all the fires out. Yeah. I know that night I had so many things going on in my life. You can't put it all out at once. Sort of like the Thomas Fire in mm-hmm. Ventura, California recently. I mean, it took them weeks to put that out, but you focus on one thing at a time.
Compartmentalize.
Yeah. And so with Colbert, I would say, but you are doing something that's like amazing. I mean, you're bringing comedy into people's lives. And especially when you look at the world, you're always going to have war.
Something
yeah,
negative.
You're going to have strife. And so if you can find those moments, whether it's through a book or through comedy, find something to take you away, sort of escapist entertainment, just have some fun, have some moments of levity in a tough world. Yeah. But
what other things? I want to know, like, was there anything else a part of, like, I know that there's a lot of that singular moment, but was there anything else that helped it along? Was there more laughter? Was there friends who were there that like said more to you? Like, was there any other helpful bits that people can kind of lean on to know that sometimes you might not be able to watch that? You were saying you know, it could be anything, the Bible, whatever, mm-hmm. but it's like, you were saying that there's not, you have to find that happiness, but for some people, it may not be the television. But was there something else that helped you along with it?
I think just honestly, as this journey got bigger and bigger, it was just really the synergy. Mm-hmm. Like I told people, it's just so cool. Like every day on average for the 798 days, every day I've met on average of like 30 people. I mean, there have been some days I met. I mean, there's one day I met 225. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. That was, wow. I was out for between 10 and 12 hours just meeting people. Nice. But I was at a festival too, and a lot of people were coming up and they wanted to see it and they were talking to me. But I was so busy that day. But I mean, there have been other days too. I've only met one or two people, but I ended up spending a whole bunch of time with them. But it was really, as the journey just went on, it was just this synergy that I pulled in from people. And it's like this collective story now of hope, support. Yeah. It's really like a cool art exhibit, like an art project.
An ongoing art project, too. I mean, there's a lot of things, too, that it's so much more than what it actually is. And it's therapy for you. For some, it might be therapy also, but it's also like artistic. It's something that people can give back and be a part of, too. Yeah. And it's really like intrinsic in all its value, because there's so many stories, so many individuals, but at the same time, it's all encompassing in this one, in these boards.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. I'm glad to be a part of it. I'm glad that we came together and made this happen, because you're someone who I definitely feel like this podcast is what it's made for, is for people like you who have these stories that need to be heard, that should be heard. And we love having that opportunity to provide that. So thank you, Ron. I appreciate it so much. From the bottom of my heart, you're more than welcome to come back anytime. If we can help you in any sort of way, please.
Yeah, and I say the same thing to you guys. I tell people on the journey all the time, let me know if you guys ever need anything.
Absolutely.
People have been amazing to me. Because every day I'll give people a little slip of paper. Mm-hmm. They can go and see the journey on social media or go to YouTube. But yeah, the same as with you guys, I said. People have been amazing to me. So I'm sure someday, I mean, some people, I'll just tell, I don't know if I can tell a quick story, but
yeah,
when
going,
I was in
going.
El Paso, Texas, like a year and a few months ago, these folks I met, they got a hold of me, I think months later, and they just said, hey, we're coming to Phoenix and we saved your information. You said to call you if we needed anything. They just wanted to know where in downtown Phoenix, like, because they knew that was my neighborhood. They said, where should we go, to a hotel, or mm-hmm. where are there fun places to hang out? And somebody asked me, do you really want people contacting you for that reason? And I said, yeah, I mean, I didn't qualify it. I just said, if you want something, to them that was important, like they felt like they knew me good enough, well enough that they could get a hold of me. And I was like, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to qualify it.
Yeah.
But it was really a cool moment for them. I mean, hundreds of miles away to feel like we had a connection, and we did. And so they got a hold of me and I told them some places to go. And,
nice.
But I've had moments like that where people will call up or just say, hey, you know, not always my story. It's other people's stories or their messages or whatever they put. Because they've signed them too in 86 languages on here on the boards. So it is really cool because people can find something they can connect to. It's not just me. I'm sort of like, I don't know if you guys ever like looked at any of the mythology out there, but there's Hermes. He's the messenger of the gods.
Yeah.
And I said, I feel like that. You like I'm the guy that's messengering it between everybody.
You know what? I kind of feel the same way because I feel like this is, again, this podcast is a way to get someone's message out, and we deliver it every Saturday, like
for the past 2 years. Yeah, that's cool. So you guys are Hermes too. That's really cool.
So I'm bonding with you on this level because I think this was meant to happen because you're someone who I think, for me at least, I connected with from that story, your TED Talk, and I just felt like, gosh, like someone who's gone through this, who's struggling with this thing that's like a part of their life every day in and out. And, you know, all they want and need or all they're trying to do is tell people this singular story and help them through the singular story. So I was like, dude, I'm totally on board. I'm like, I'm there. Yeah. And so let me ask you one of your favorite stories that you've gotten through through these past, like how many days?
Oh my God. 798.
798. Yeah.
Some of the stories. Wow. I mean, there are some that
just pick like a couple of them that like stand out for you for sure.
One of them was in, this was a little over 2 years ago. It was only in like the 30th or 40th day I did this. Nice. I went back to see my family and, friends. I grew up in the Chicago area in Indiana, the suburbs there.
Nice.
And
why are there so many, like, I'm sorry to interfere, but like we live in a duplex. So it's like, There's two people who live on this side and that side, and they like are from Illinois, like
are they?
outside of Chicago.
A lot of them move here because of the weather.
Yeah,
I think that is actually, but yeah, there are tons of Chicago transplants out here.
Yeah,
but when I went back there two Christmases, well, it was the Christmas of 2015. Yeah, it's so crazy to think it was that long ago. But when I was there, when I was coming home, it was right before New Year's, and there was a snowstorm, ice storm. And Midway Airport, the smaller airport, well, O'Hare wasn't any better. They both had huge delays. Hardly any flights were getting out. And so I had the boards with me and I was like, what am I going to do? I can sit here on my phone like everybody else, or people were upset with the gate agents. I mean, people are, anytime you have, it's that between the two big holidays like that, people want to get home and they're with their family. So sometimes they get frustrated and angry. And I decided, I thought, well, I'm going to just meet people because there's nothing I can do. So let's just go. So I went around the airport, and one of the coolest moments when I was in one of the terminals, I had met all these people and I went to go get something to eat and take a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
And this lady taps me on the shoulder and I said, oh my gosh, I just met you like a little bit ago. And she said, yeah. And yeah, hopefully I don't cry for this one. It's like a really positive, happy story though. But as she started talking to me and she said, yeah, you met us all. She said, down at the end, and she said, we all put together, a big group of us down there that you had impacted. We all put together a care package for you to take back to Phoenix. And I said, wow. And she said, we were just sitting there and we could hear everybody complaining and nagging. And we were just frustrated because we also were going to be stuck and we didn't know how they were going back to the East Coast. And she just said, it just put it in perspective. Like, you and some of these other people you were telling us stories about have gone through a lot. And we just realized like we're all complaining. We're with each other.
Yeah.
And we're here and we're with family and friends. She just said a whole group of them got together and just said, you know what? Let's give that guy so they gave me a whole bunch of candies and cookies.
Gosh.
And then she looked down and a bunch of the people at the end of the terminal were all waving. And I almost started crying.
Jeez.
But it's like that was such an amazing moment because it put it in perspective, like what life is truly about. Yeah. And for me, even if I have moments that I forget what it's truly about, I always go back to that moment because I'm thinking it changed a lot of people's lives that day. But they changed my life and it's back and forth. But that was a really cool moment.
There's no other better, like, I feel like there's no other place in the world that you can get emotionally tied to strangers than the airport.
Yeah.
Like, you see the best of people in their best moments, because it's like either you're there to depart and go somewhere and then you're sad because you're leaving individuals, or you're there to pick up someone. You're so happy to see them. You're so like enthralled and you miss them so much. And I just feel like those emotions are like pure in the sense of like joy or sadness. You still feel it in here as a person. And that's crazy.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I think, and yeah, airports can also be a, like you can go through some of the worst emotions too, because if your flight is delayed like that, or it's a holiday, which that was, but a lot of times too, you're right. Like in an airport, it can also get very emotional too. Cause then you remember like, why am I here at this airport? You know, I'm going to depart and I'm going to leave people. And so I think it made people start thinking of what the true meaning of that holiday season was, and that they were actually with friends and family and got the chance. There are so many people that don't get the chance. So it just made them start thinking a little deeper.
Yeah.
So many cool moments like that. And then, oh my gosh. And then New York, this was a recent one. I was there about 3 months ago. Rutgers University and PTSD Journal magazine came together and they flew me in to talk at a conference in Newark, New Jersey. So a guy I met there, he took me into Manhattan to meet people the next day. And he also had his story that he shared with everybody about PTSD. So he took me in there and I'd never been to Manhattan before. I mean, this whole journey is to get, one of the big goals of this is to get to New York, to be with Stephen Colbert and get on there. And I get to New York and people all around the country had been telling me, oh my God, wait till you get to New York. People are going to be so mean to you, nasty. They're not going to be like nice to you. And I got there and it was true. They were mean to me in the New York Times or the Times Square adjacent area. So I almost gave up. There's an interesting story. I was at a Starbucks there and the first five or six people I talked to just either didn't pay attention to me. They told me to go away. One guy didn't even tell me to go away. He just motioned with his hand, like, move along, go away. And I was crushed and I thought, oh, come on. No, this can't be happening. And I was mad because I didn't want it to be true what people had told me. Yeah. So I went outside and I stood on the corner and no joke, this lady, she's probably 25 to 30, walked right in, didn't have her phone. She just walked right into me, hit me in her shoulder. I mean, I don't think she came at me like a football player, but she just bumped into me. All the boards went all over the street and the sidewalk and nobody helped me pick them up. She just kept going. And a car ran over one of the boards and I literally almost started crying there. And I looked at my friend Afraz and I just shook my head and something inside me just said, don't give up. Come on. Now you've been through worse. Don't. Cause I was going to tell him to take me back to Jersey. I want to stay in Jersey. That's where I was staying. And I just said, can we go somewhere else? And instead of saying, take me home, he took me to Washington Square Park, right adjacent to NYU.
Yeah, and that's a good place to go. I've been there before.
Been there?
Yeah.
It was so cool.
I like it there because it's one part. I think it's the university's mentality. Like NYU is, I have that upper, like that. What do they call that borough? I forget that part of town. I forget what that borough is called, but it's like,
Is that not Manhattan then?
I don't know. I'm honestly, like, I couldn't tell you. But it's like, I feel like the university part, the NYU part of, like, the city, where it's just, like, it's so, like, they're more open to that. Like, they're just kids.
They were. Yeah. And that's what I started, even there in Washington Square Park and NYU, they were guarded. And a lot of the New Yorkers there and the students told me when I approached them, they said, okay, we were very skeptical, like, because New Yorkers, they're like, we're all want to know, why are you getting in my space? What are you doing? So they were very questioning. They were very, like, nervous. But I met dozens of them. And what was really a cool moment is as I was coming home, I think I was in the Newark airport, probably at Newark, and I was coming home that night, and I saw a Facebook message, and I pulled it off on my phone. And it was this student from NYU, this female student, and she just had a couple of paragraphs she wrote. And she said, it was so cool. You came up to me and my friends. She said, as soon as you left, I called my mother in Southern Cal, where she grew up. And she said, she started talking to her mother. She said, I met this guy. Her mother's probably thinking, you met a guy? Like a guy to marry? Yeah. And she's like, no, I met this guy. And she said her and her mother were so emotional because their family's going through mental illness. Like there are a couple members of the family that are really struggling. And she herself said, I think it was anxiety disorder. she said she struggles so badly. And she's like, when I left, she was like so positive and emotional in a good way. Like, oh my gosh. But she also was saying like, she read the messages from all those other people. It wasn't just, again, it wasn't just my story.
Yeah, it's not just you. It's an encompassment of what you're doing with these other people and what they write down. Not only for you, but for the next person to read.
Exactly. And what was so powerful about that moment, well, given my experiences leading up to that, I almost left and went back and just said, I'm not going to do this. But I didn't. Something kept telling me, you can get through to these guys in New York. You can. And then just the fact that the New Yorkers were telling me that they're very guarded. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that I could meet somebody like her. And she said, like, I needed this so badly. And it was really cool, too. In the end of the email or the Facebook message, she said, and my mother works for a PR firm and she does stuff with some of the people in the entertainment industry.
Nice.
And she's like, we'll see if we can help you. And I'm sure she's tried to help, but this is a tough ask for people.
Yeah,
like, I talk to PR companies around the country just to gauge what if I could pay their fees. It's expensive to hire these PR people. But they said, yeah, if you could afford us, it would take a while to get you on a show like that because you're not a celebrity. Mm-hmm. And I said, but it was really cool that she said, you know, my mother felt so touched that somebody could come in her daughter's life like that and touch her. Mm-hmm. She's like, we'll see what we can do. And she looked at all my stuff online. So it is really cool because then it becomes, like I said, much bigger than me, much bigger than the student I met.
You got to tell yourself too. It's like, you know, every story, every person that you meet, it's like, it's a one step closer to that to that next door.
Yeah.
And I think that you are on to something really, really, really special because it's just, I can see it. I can see the process. I can see the method. And I just want to believe so much that this is going towards that goal.
I know. It's just, some days I sit and I think, really, I don't try to think too hard about all this because if I do, I'll probably stop doing it because it's a lot to take in. It it would probably get too overwhelming for me, honestly.
Yeah. I'm gonna flip the script on you too because it's like, I mean, one part it's like you're opening yourself up to this moment that, I mean, most people would want to steer away from. I don't know why, but it's just like also it's too. It's like I'm gonna rip it off like a Band-Aid. You're like a walking billboard for, you know, PTSD and for sexual assault. And it's just, some people just like, I don't know. They just either don't want to discuss it or don't want to be a part of it in any sort of way. And it's just really, it's heartbreaking. But at the same time, do you feel like to dwell on that sort of thing, like to have that feeling of a walking billboard, so to speak?
Well, because I remember a lady asked me, this was probably in the second month I did it. It was so long ago, but she said to me, sort of like along the lines of what you were asking, she said, I love what you're doing, but you go out every day and you talk about this. Doesn't that bother you? And I said, I had to think about it. I was like, no, I don't really feel bothered. But as I thought more about it later on, I thought, why don't I feel bothered? Because you're right, I'm talking about this stuff that isn't great. But what happened is, as time went on, I started controlling the story. It used to control me. Mm-hmm. And I would get caught in loops where I couldn't get out. The doctors used to describe it. It's like very circular. You get caught in a loop, like a racetrack, round and round. And if you can't get out of that, a lot of people, it destroys you.
Eats you up inside, yeah.
So what was happening is I'd get out of the loop, I'd go talk to people, I'd share the story. But there was there's like something positive coming out of it because I was able to tell the story, talk to people and say, hey, it's your turn. Like, if you want to put anything, if you want to support, whatever, it's your board. And that's what I would tell people. And so, yeah, it allowed me to start controlling the story more and more. There are days, believe me, after all these days, I still struggle.
I imagine that. Like, I can honestly imagine that. Like that's, do you, on those days, do you just go straight to therapy or what keeps you, I guess, brings you down off of that kind of negative edge?
Oh, yeah. And for me, I said, like, one of the positive, I try to tell people this to let them know how, like, meeting all of you guys has helped me. But for the last probably like 15 months now, I haven't needed to take any of my prescription pain meds, sleeping pills, or psych meds.
Nice.
And I haven't been in any professional counseling or therapy sessions. But it doesn't diminish meds or professional therapists and counselors. But for me, this
This is your therapy.
Yeah, and this became it. And I told people, like, literally every day I'm engaging. Some days I've been doing a lot of odd jobs, doing a lot of cleaning jobs the last year just to get enough money to get by. But this is so important to me. It's just, it means, it's hard to, I just told people, like, they weren't there that night when I felt what I felt. It's just to put in almost 6,000 hours now of either just meeting people or doing things where, like getting ready for a presentation to talk about this. But I put in about 6,000 hours now total just for this project and this therapy. Wow. And I said, when you think about it, it's like 6,000 hours to get on a TV show for 5 minutes. But I know people that train a year and a half to do a marathon. I met a lady on the journey. She lost 150 pounds. She wanted to do the Chicago Marathon. And she told me, she did it. She told me there were people on her journey through life telling her, oh, come on, man. You know, you're a big woman. They said, come on, maybe you should try doing a 5K, maybe a half marathon. And why don't you try doing it in a warmer place like Miami? And she said, listen, I'm doing Chicago. I'm doing the marathon and I will lose 150 pounds. And I think it took her like a year and a half, but she did it.
Exactly.
And so it's like, don't dissuade her. And for me, I mean,
it's that mental fortitude. I'm telling you, the great thing about this is that you have reference to go back to every single board that you have. You know, you may have a bad day, but I honestly believe if you read every single one of those boards, like therapy, you're going to like, again, it's reciprocal. You go out and you expose yourself, but in the end, the therapy is the people writing in, talking to you, telling you it's going to be okay. If you do have a bad day, you just use those boards to tell you that it's going to be okay. And then you keep doing it. You just keep doing it, and it'll get your range, who you affect, the network gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's just, I honestly... Like, to me, you were doing a podcast, but you're writing down, all of your podcasts are on boards. Like, to me, that's what I see. I see a podcast that is so many, like 2,000, you've already done 20,000 podcasts.
Oh, yeah, 20. I keep track because people used to ask me how many, the numbers became pretty important for people. Yeah. And I would ask psychologists, like, why do you guys think that? And they said, because if their only way to gauge your success, are you getting better, is did you get on the show?
Yeah.
And if it's a yes, they're like really excited. If it's a no, and they said, I think people are asking, like on the journey, it was strange, but well, I mean, it's not strange, but in the first week, people started asking, so how many people have you met? Because I think they were, I don't think people really understood. I didn't understand it. I just knew I needed to get meeting people. And it was so, it was helping me. I didn't know what it would become. I just knew I needed to talk to people. And I had this, that moment, like, I'll get on the show. But as it got bigger and bigger, people were like, well, how many boards? How many people? Where have you been? How many days? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, now it's 24,024. It's 359 boards, these giant boards. It's...
Are we 23 and 24?
20... Oh, no, you guys, if you want to sign, it'll be 25 and 26.
That was the whole point of this. We want to sign. Like, I would love to be a part of it. And yes, I would like all of this to me is very fantastic. And it's just so like, there's a beauty and a simplicity to it that I just can't get over that. It's just like, it's just like, that makes sense.
I like that you said simplicity too, because a lot of, there was somebody in the media, this probably, my guess was a year and a half ago, she interviewed me and she said she was trying to make it more complex than it needed to be. And I just said, no, it's really simple. Oh, because I told her, she told me at some point, she said, it sounds like a Disney movie, you know, because she said, you just want to get on his show. You want to tell your story and turn it into something happy. And I said, yeah. And she wanted more. And I'm like, that's it.
She wanted more.
Literally, that's really what I am trying to do. That's what I saw that night. That's when I paused the show. In the TEDx talk, I even said it was the simplicity. That's why I was so happy you said that, that word. It was the simplicity of an 8-year-old mindset. Because I literally just, if I would have thought through it, like a lot of PR agents around the country have weighed in on, and they said, listen, we love what you're doing. And you know, there's like the conjunction coming, but why did you pick such a show? Like, they're like, Ellen would take you probably. And I mean, it hasn't been easy to get even on Ellen, but they said, you know, why didn't you pick a show even that you don't really need to be a celebrity? And I said, but you're missing the whole point of why I didn't that night. Had I overthought it?
I didn't watch Ellen. I didn't watch like.
And I was like, if I would have overthought it too, and said, if I would have paused the show and said, well, wait a minute,
I can't get on that
show. Exactly. And I would have nixed the idea. And I said, odds are, I don't think I'd be here today.
Exactly.
Because I said I went with the pure beauty and the simplicity of like an 8-year-old kid's mindset. Because if an 8-year-old guy or girl has a moment like that, they're going to say, I'm going to get on this show. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to, if a cat made somebody super happy and they were at a friend's house, they're like, they might go home and tell their parents, I want to get a cat. And the parents would be like, but why? You know, Johnny or Susie. And Johnny or Susie would explain like, hey, this, you know,
I saw a cat, and
it's just, you go with that. And I tell people, go with the simplicity of emotion. I'm not in the kind of, and then you get people that are like, you mean the emotion? Like if you have road rage, I'm like, no, if it's going to hurt people, no. But if you have this emotion that comes over you, go with it. Mm-hmm. I think almost
that gut feeling.
Exactly. And with business people, like they have this idea, like I want to start a business, and they have this emotional beauty that hits, go with it. Don't sleep on it. Just tell yourself, well, sleep on it, but tell yourself, don't have smoldering ambitions. The next morning when you wake up, stay with it. And don't let anybody distract or detract you from it. Exactly. But yeah, when you said simplicity, it hits, for me, it hits a home run.
Yeah.
Because that's what people, I really think, need to go back to. Mm-hmm. Simplicity and just emotion. And you can, I'm not going to sit here and tell you can solve the world's problems, but I mean, you can make huge strides by starting that way. So, yeah.
Awesome. Let me ask you a question. So when you go and like count all the people, do you just like, at the end of your day, you count out how many people you think you remember, or like, do you physically have like a counter?
Oh,
like,
no.
Like, what's the story? Like, how?
I should have, if I could go back, I don't know. Somebody had asked me that too. If I would have had a counter, it probably would have helped. I probably would have needed a pedometer, because everybody asks, not everybody, but a lot of people ask, hey, how many miles have you gone? How many steps? Yeah. I've estimated, I think it's about 5,000 miles that I've walked. And that's, you know, it's hard to say, but I was gauging, I don't know, you have to come up with all these like little formulas, and maybe some math students could help me with that one day just to gauge it. But no, like there were some days when I was meeting, like in the first year, so many people in a day, because this was such a critical therapy for me in the first year, especially.
Yeah.
Big time. There were so many people I'd meet on those days, and I'd look at the boards and I'd have to just count the messages, because it was so, because if you get a bunch of people that got around you, maybe I was at a university or a festival or on the sidewalk, and people then start coming up to you like, what are you doing, man? Why are people putting stuff on this? And then you get a lot of people. It's hard to count them all. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not, because I never wanted to just be all about counting. I wanted to pay attention to the people.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like, it's this moment. And so it got so exciting. So some days, I would just go home and I would count like, okay, how many new messages? Just again, to keep track, to like, because it's, we are a society that likes numbers. And I learned that if you look at every Monday, all the news stations will talk about who the blockbusters were, the movies, how well they did over the weekend. They're like, these are the receipts and these are the winners. And they'll list how many millions of dollars each movie does. And then in, oh my gosh, in 3 weeks, the Olympics start. Mm-hmm. And you know what every news media is going to do? The Olympic gold medal counts.
Yeah, how many gold medals?
Yeah, so, and then people love to see like the temperature, how much snow did Chicago get? Or how many inches of rain did Texas get during the hurricane? People, but it's a way for people to gauge like good and bad or just what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I, again, it's just, I think on this journey, I found that out. And so I like to share that with people because they want to be part of it. And it's just, and I think people also want to just be part of something bigger than them. Like that's why I mean, now that I keep doing this, like this is much bigger than me. It's much bigger than all the people I meet. It's, and I think that's really cool is that people get a perspective like, wow, you know, I'm part of something that's like good. It's like in the world and it's bigger than me. And I think it comforts people to know that like all these other people, it can get emotional for me. Cause then I look at the boards and I just, oh my gosh. Yeah. When I was at that art exhibit on July 7th last summer in downtown Phoenix, all the boards were up. All these artists, they were like 30 or 40 artists from around the valley that came in and they made that happen. And then Ben Smith, the CEO of Unexpected Art Gallery, he made that happen. Nice. I didn't have the money to do this, and they all made it happen. But it was really cool to see all these people come together. And then all these boards went up. Wow. And people, I mean, I have no idea if there were 150, 300, I think a couple hundred people came into the gallery, and they just got to see all these boards. And there there were a few people that came in and said, I remember this one guy walked up to me and said, "You really met all these people and you just went up to them?" And I said, "Yeah." And he kept going back to the boards, and I would sit there and I'd talk to people, and every once in a while I'd look up and he was like looking at me, and somebody's like, they came up and they're like, I think he was just like
amazed.
Yeah. Like, you really met all these people. But it's also, it puts in perspective, like, hey, we social media is so huge in our society, and there's definitely a place for everything, but I think people are maybe, when they meet me, are starting to realize, wow, there's a positive aspect of actually the face-to-face.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I was like,
that's another thing too. Like, now that you brought that up, I was like, holy crap. Like, yeah, there's an aspect to social media that we all love, and the instant gratification that comes with, once you post it, so many people can see it and kind of give you feedback, but there's something more, and value wise, I think, when you see something physical like this board, like the boards that you have, and you just start to realize, like, oh my goodness, like, this singular person affected this many people.
Yeah. And then I, on the other side too, I tell people, look at all these people that impacted me. Like, I've been able to pull off all these meds. I've been able to start working a year ago.
Yeah.
There are so many people I meet on this journey that they have PTSD. Especially PTSD, that I've met people that 15, 20 years after their trauma, they're still on disability, still struggling to get out of the house a lot of times, on a lot of meds, in and out of suicidal moments. They still go to their therapy. And I just look at myself and think, all these people have been a huge part of why
I
think people take for granted. Yeah. Like, I have been able to start doing like cleaning jobs again. I mean, I never wanted to go on disability. I thought about it, and there was a huge part of me that just said, no, come on. And I think it was just, it doesn't diminish at
anyone,
all people that take and go and cause if you need it, you need it. But something, I think it was just something in me that thought, can I do this? What can I do? And I was just, I've always been rebellious. I've always been quixotic. I truly believe too, that night, a couple, 26, 27 months ago, when that all happened and I laughed, I found who I've always been my whole life, this quixotic person. Like, I see things very differently than people, but it's weird to say that I see things differently, because it was something so simple. It goes back to that word simple, laughter.
Yeah.
Like, something that was right in front of me, and then something as simple as meeting people. But
interacting, talking to them face to face.
Yeah, super challenging though. But yeah, people have, they've had such an impact on me, and just the fact that, and I it's like, tonight I'll sleep probably 6 to 8 hours, and I don't need, 2.5 years ago, I had to take Zolpidem, Ambien to sleep, and it wasn't even as effective as it used to be. And doctors said, we got to watch this, because if you take this too much, there aren't enough studies that have shown the huge long-term effects.
Yeah.
So knock on wood that the long period of time I was on that stuff, it's not going to have, but I mean, I can't change that now. Yeah. So all I can do is move forward, but I'm so happy I don't have to rely. You can't get hooked on those things. You become dependent on that stuff. And so the doctors warned me. So anyway, but yeah, so that's amazing that I've been able to,
it's incredible.
Have to do that. So,
oh man, that's like all of these things that, like, there's so many overlapping layers to it that just kind of, when you put it all together and you kind of just see this beauty of like what you have in front of you, like the blade, the boards themselves are just incredible. And I'm very excited for you. Like, is she okay? Just having a hairball moment over here. Okay. Is she still going? Okay.
Just a cat hairball.
Well, we're going to edit that out.
Sorry about that.
All right. And we're back. But Ron, I want to take a moment to just like share with you that like you're an incredible person. I hope that whatever is going on that stays in the background, like whatever that therapy, it keeps going. And honestly, you're just like someone very special that honestly, like when you said you wanted to come on the show, I was like, I don't know. Like, we'll see what happens. Like, I just was like we get business owners usually in here, but I never had anyone like you that had this significant thing happen that has affected their lives in so many ways. So I was just like, you know what? Let's take the plunge. Let's do this. let's do this. So, yeah. So I appreciate you coming in. And like, again, these stories of all of them, just every single person, 83 languages, over 20,000 people, like for you, if you could put a timeline to it, is there a hope or a wish for when you want to be on that late show?
Oh my gosh. Today.
Today. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Because I just want to know it can happen. Like, you know, some days you go and go and...
What's the first thing you might say to him if you had the chance? Like, you know...
Sometimes I think I just want to let the moment happen. Because I was telling somebody, I'm not even sure. And I think I just want to let whatever happens happen. Like when I go in there, I don't think I want to even prepare. I think a large part of me just wants to see what happens as it happens because...
You don't know what goes on backstage. You
don't
know,
and I have no clue. Like because it's gonna be so different because it's something, you know. It's like when I crossed the finish line, the first marathon I ever did. Well, in that one, I was injured really badly, but I crossed, and I couldn't walk for like 5 days. But it's just this moment that you have this build up. And it's just, I think I just want to let the moment happen, whatever happens and however I feel. And I think I'm just going to wait. And
you're just going to wait.
It sounds strange because I think there were some people that said, come on, you have to know exactly what you're going to say to him. And
I think just a simple thank you. Like, I don't know why for me, it's just like a simple, like from the bottom of your heart, thank you for just being you. Like,
and it'll, I mean, my guess, it's probably going to be, my guess would be it'd be emotional because to be in that moment, when I had that show pause that night, I could picture being on there and people say like when you have this vision, I mean, whether you're a business owner, or, you know, an entrepreneur, you're going to start a new business. Mm-hmm. You picture yourself like your business is growing and you have all this, or people that are running for political office, they've said before they envision like, I'm going to be sitting at, whether it's the Oval Office or you're just going to be at a city council level or a school board, but you have to picture it. That night, it was just sort of really cool. I'm like, I'm going to be on there. Mm-hmm. And I just said to myself, I'm going to get on here. Yeah. And I looked, and I think it'll be really cool to see after so many thousands of hours and after so many meeting so many people, and it's going to be hard. Hard in the sense to process what that's going to be like.
I think another cool thing that I'm just like envisioning for you, like that moment of when you paused in that monologue, I imagine in myself too, it's like, there's gotta be, when you get on, there's going to be a moment where it's like, everything pauses. You're staring at yourself through that TV screen almost. Like you're just like, your vision has come true, but the person that you were in 2015 is looking at the new vision of you. Like, it's just like one of those like weird out of body experience. Like, that's what I imagine, like it's gonna happen. And it's gonna be one of those things that like, it's gonna be an incredible moment for you. And I'm rooting for you every step of the way. We're gonna finish up, usually at the end here, we allow you to just... Oh, wait. Brittany, do you have a question?
No, I think you guys covered a lot of it.
Okay.
So many good stories. Yeah, you answered my one about where you're from. Stories, so...
Awesome. So, great. So, again, this last part of the podcast is for you to tell everyone where they can find you online, any upcoming events that you might be going to or anything like that, but this is just your opportunity to let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah. Well, the events part, I probably easily 98% of this is just so spontaneous. I just pick up and go.
Yeah.
But I mean, like one area I've done a lot, because I live in the Arts District in downtown Phoenix, I go to First Fridays almost all the time. It's right in my neighborhood. And so like, I'm sure this First Friday, unless there's something going on, I like the American PTSD Association in DC.
Yeah.
They're supporting my efforts to do a second TEDx talk because that's going to actually help them. They said, if we can have you do a TEDx talk, we can put it on our site and it can actually help what we're trying to move forward with. So who knows? I mean, but that's going to be, that would be months down the line, but, No, I mean, if people wanted to find more information, I give people those little slips of paper every day after I meet them. And it's just, it's Blake Late Show on Facebook and Instagram. There's a guy I'm meeting with next Monday. He wants to help me put together a website. He was so...
Absolutely.
Really, I meet so many cool people, but he said, why don't we... He said, I can help you and guide you, and it shouldn't cost. And he said... So, I mean, there's no website right now, but yeah, it's Blake Late Show on Facebook and Instagram. And then, I mean, there are a lot of things on YouTube. Like, there's...
I'm so sorry. Did you want to be called Ron or Blake? Like, oh, I just realized. I was like, yeah.
I had two first names. So, I mean, it's Ron Blake, but... my friend Brian, he helped me put together an Instagram in November 2015. He said, I didn't know anything about Instagram. He said, you need to do this because if you're going to go out and meet people, take pictures with people, people like to see stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you want to call it? And I sat there for a little bit and they were like crickets. And it's like, what are we going to call it? And I said, well, I want to get on the Late Show. My name's Blake. I don't think we should call it Ron Late Show. So I said, and everybody in Indiana University where I went and back in the Chicago area used to call me mostly by my last name. So I said, let's just call it Blake Late Show. Okay. And so that's how it started. People call me by both. I mean, they're both my names.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, man. And I like, honestly, let me shake your hand because that incredible story, a lot of like, I'm going to take this and just kind of hold it dear to my heart because like, again, we've never had anyone like you with such an incredible story of resilience, positivity, all this stuff that comes along with it. And we're glad to be a part of your journey. So
yeah, well, thank you. And it's sort of cool too, because this whole central downtown area of Phoenix, a lot of the coffee shop owners have been amazing to me to let me come in and talk to people. And it's become, it's really cool. And a lot of just people in the downtown district, it's built out from there, but it's just really cool how it starts in a location, it builds and builds.
Yep.
And then I got enough energy inside me and to say, okay, I can keep moving out. And so I started exploring more of Arizona and more of the valley and more of Arizona. And then I started getting to different parts of the country, but it took the neighborhood to start like to feel secure enough to move outward. And absolutely, then it happened. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I appreciate it too. And then with that, guys, you can reach us at findingarizonapodcast.com to find all our episodes. And if you want to reach us on social media, Finding Arizona Podcast under everything, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And it would mean a lot to me if you guys go to patreon.com/findingarizona to help us get better equipment, travel a little bit, and be able to get out just like Blake. So with that, we say goodnight. Good night, everybody. Bye.